there's less stress in a remote work environment. You give people a little bit more flexibility on their schedule. You treat them like adults. And suddenly, if life is good at work, then life is good at home. And the idea of work-life balance to me is wrong. I don't see it as a tug back and forth. I don't see them as mutually exclusive. I don't see them as canceling each other out.
Welcome to another episode of Outside the Valley, a podcast by ARC, the remote hiring platform that helps you hire remote software engineers and teams easily. Here we interview remote startup leaders, remote work advocates, and workers of distributed teams who thrive outside of Silicon Valley. I'm your host, Jovian Gautama. Today we have Jesse Meekham, founder and CEO of YNAB, which stands for You Need a Budget, a personal finance software that helps you quickly gain control of your money, get out of debt, and save more money faster. In this episode, we talk about how Jesse started YNAB back in 2004 and how it evolved and scaled to be the remote company as it is now. We also talk about his approach in delivering feedback and criticism and the deliberate steps that Jesse took along the years to become a better remote leader. Jesse also shared about YNAB's cultural manifesto, unique interview questions the team uses when hiring new team members, and the impact of remote work on Jesse's life. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do consider leaving a review on iTunes because it will help other listeners to find the podcast. Here we go, Jesse Meekham. Hello, Jesse. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Awesome. So, Jesse, I recently just started using YNAB. I'm loving it so far. What I really like about YNAB is how intentional it is and how opinionated it is. So as when I'm doing research about YNAB as a company, there are some parallels on the product and how you as a CEO run the company. So I want to dive a little bit more into that. So yeah, so let's start a bit about a quick intro about your background and YNAB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started YNAB back in 2004 while I was still in school, and was studying to get a master's degree of accounting. And I originally launched it as a spreadsheet. So it literally was a spreadsheet that you could copy and hand around. It had zero controls on it, but it all worked out just fine. And it was a perfect attempt to ask people for money when you had something that was barely viable. And so it started with a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet lasted about a year and a half, and then quickly realized that we needed real software. So we started building that, and we've just kind of evolved from platform to platform. We used old school frameworks like Adobe Air to be on Windows and Mac simultaneously. Now we're obviously on the web as a SaaS offering, and we've got the mobile, you know, iOS and Android clients as well. So the software has evolved from, you know, pretty rinky-dink software in a spreadsheet form all the way up to very sophisticated software. But the method that we teach, the method that the software reinforced, whether in the spreadsheet medium or now, has remained very much the same. And that's kind of been our clarion call, is that we teach people a new way of thinking about their money and then let the software just help them implement that.
Right. That's amazing. And if I'm mistaken, you started creating or developing YNAB as a software when you met your CTO, Taylor, and it's also remote settings. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Taylor wrote to me and he said, hey, I could help you improve your spreadsheet. And I said, you know, he was kind of an interested customer, but also interested on the tech side. And I said, well, I'd really like to have actual software. And so he said, well, I can do that too. And so he and I did lots of phone calls back and forth, like real phone calls on landlines, you know, and we chatted for a little while and then kind of got the bare bones in place and an agreement in place. And he got off and we launched the first version 9 months after we met over the phone, having never met in person. So we kind of tested the remote idea very early on before it was really a thing that I was aware of. And it works. So we've stuck with it ever since.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think a lot of entrepreneurs or company leaders nowadays, some of them are quite lucky that they found that they can work remotely like super early. So I interviewed Hiten Shah. a while ago. And for him, remote work is just work because he's been doing it since out of college, since 2003. And then comes naturally. So that's amazing. So I want to dive a bit more into your leadership style and the culture in YNAB. So when it comes to remote work, the theme of the podcast is because sometimes you need to be very, very intentional when it comes to building culture and doing small actions like giving feedbacks. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do this in the co-located companies, but you just need to amp up a little more. So I want to ask you about your philosophy when it comes to giving feedback to your employees. Like, how do you deliver criticism and how do you deliver praise, for example?
Yeah, one rule that we follow, and I think this comes pretty instinctively to most people, but you always critique in private. You criticize, and I mean constructively criticize, in private, one-on-one. And then if you can, it's nice to get praise at any time, but it's very nice to have praise given in front of your peers. So we try and praise in public and critique in private. Sometimes it's really nice to praise someone by saying that someone else said something to you about them. And we have that happen regularly on the team. And there's something about that that's quite nice. So that's nothing revolutionary. You know, you don't want to embarrass someone in front of people ever. And so we just stick to that. And it works very, very well.
Right. That's awesome. So still under this topic. So in one of YNAB's podcast episodes back when to 2016, so you mentioned about that you received some feedback, I guess, that you were quite a bit, quote unquote, lax about setting expectations. And you say on the podcast that you were going to work on it. So I think a lot of CEOs, especially as they grow and they want to level up, they face this similar problem, especially when remote teams, when it's kind of like catch 22. So when you start a remote team, you need a high level of trust. But when you trust people a lot, sometimes you forget that they need some kind of direction or expectation. Yeah. So at that time, like, what were the deliberate steps you take to be better at this? And what were the conscious steps?
Yeah. Well, one point I want to make is that trust and clear expectations are not the same thing. So you can trust someone and still give clear expectations. That's just, right. Good management. And so want to make sure that's clear, but dropping the ball. And that was the real issue, was I wasn't following through on what I said. And so I read a book, and the book was Getting Things Done by David Allen. It's kind of a classic at this point, probably. And I implemented it. Like, I didn't question anything about it. What he said, I took his gospel and ran with it. And I've been running with that same program. The podcast I talked about was in 2016, but the feedback was given to me years before that. So
I see.
I've been running with that Getting Things Done method for a decade. And it's not foolproof. Nothing is, but I made marked improvement in following through and doing what I said I would do when I said I would do it, and not forgetting that I said something at all. And that was key. So I took that, and it's just a matter of getting everything that you say or that you think into something that you trust as far as systems go, and then regularly reviewing that system so that you don't lose those things. That's kind of the gist of it. But it worked for me, and I readily recommend it to others that are struggling with the same thing.
Yeah, great. You mentioned like not forgetting. So did you change your habit a little bit? So let's say when you say something, did you like more deliberately take notes?
Yeah, I just, you can rapidly record log notes. And I use an app called Things. It's fantastic. And I've been using that for literally for a decade. And anytime I have a thought or think I need to follow up with someone, I type it very quickly with a quick keyboard shortcut. And then every Monday I process everything that I've written. And and that's that. And so that I know that I can let it go, but I haven't lost it.
Got it. So, right. So still on the culture side of this, you wrote a post on LinkedIn about, please stop talking about company culture, which I 100% agree with. So I realized, and you also have a culture manifesto. So I saw that culture manifesto, and I feel like it's really well written, like it's really well codified in one paragraph. So I wonder back then, how did you go about assessing and analyzing your team and your company to figure out, okay, this is our manifesto. This is what we stand for.
Yeah. I wrote it in about 30 minutes and I didn't do any analysis beforehand. So I think the key with setting those core values, which is what that manifesto is just asking yourself what you are right now, not what you are always or perfectly, because no one is that, but what you are on the whole. And that's what I did when I wrote that. I sat down and rattled off the things that I thought I had and that the team had already as far as attributes. And I didn't write anything aspirational. You know, I just wrote what we are. Mm-hmm. And that was key. So you can aspire to do those things better, but you can't aspire to do something that you don't possess at all. That's that doesn't work. Cause then you're saying something that you aren't already. And I don't think that works as far as core values go.
Right.
Totally. That was it. So it resonated well with the team because the team was that already. Mm-hmm. And so they happily accepted it, saying, well, yeah, this sounds great because this is who we are. And then the thing you do is you make sure that you hire people that manifesto resonates with, and you're off to the races at that point.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, that was also kind of like my next question. Like, did you run before it's published? Like, what was the team think about it, or do you have any additional feedback on that? Quick question. How big is YNAB now?
We're just a little over 100 employees.
Mm-hmm. At this point. Yeah. And how big were YNAB when you published the culture manifesto?
I'm not totally sure. Probably around a dozen employees.
Oh, right. It's interesting because a dozen, so it's still pretty small. It's a really cool, like it's, I think a lot of companies forget this, that you have to figure this out in a very early stage when it's a dozen. I think a lot of remote companies, especially, they only think about this when they are like 30 or 50 people, which still makes sense. And what I've seen is when your company is bigger, as a CEO, you kind of don't know, like you're a bit detached just because the company is big from day-to-day mm-hmm. operations. So when you're a bit dozen, like I can totally imagine that people see it as, yep, this is where we are and this is our company. So that's a fantastic move, actually.
It's very easy. And the nice thing is, if you start early, you can do this at any point. It is easier when you're smaller. Absolutely.
Right. Speaking of that, this cultural manifesto, has it kind of like, you know, did you modify it or like evolve over time?
The actual paragraph that you cited, we have not changed at all. The mm-hmm. core values themselves, we distilled down to 7. So the manifesto includes it's a little bit of a broader description.
Core
values that we've adopted that are part of our, like a working document that we regularly review and cite, that's 7 core values that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love it because a lot of times like culture can be some kind of like buzzwords. Oh, we love our company culture. But I like that you just codified it down. And one thing that I really like is a quote from Jason Fried of Basecamp, like culture is not this big thing, but it's things that your company do every day, like on a 50 days average, what does your company need? That is your culture.
People confuse it with like the vibe of an office, like the
brand
of an office. It has nothing to do with that. It's more about the company character and far less about the company, you know, cafeteria build out.
Mm-hmm. Totally, I agree with that. So I want to talk a bit about all hands meetings. So I found this a very interesting topic because I realized like a lot of founders actually still struggle. Like, oh, what do I talk in an all hands meeting? What should I prepare? Just curious, what's the format in YNAB and how do you prepare for these meetings?
Yeah, I follow a Google Slides template that never changes, and I just swap in little bits that are different. So we always start with welcoming people that are newly hired. Mm-hmm. And then I pull out a snippet that I want to emphasize from our 3-year vision that I wrote at any point. You know, it could have been I wrote it 3 years ago. I could have written it the month before, depending on where we're at in that 3-year plan. But I'll read a part of that vision just so it kind of stays top of mind. And then we'll review one of the 7 core values and talk about that very, very briefly, usually.
Wow.
And then we go over goals, where we stand for the year on our goals, where the financials are. And at that point, my part wraps up and then I turn it over to our chief product officer. And no, that's not true. Then we have an employee presentation on any topic they want. And the rule is that we always have the newest, you know, new people go first. But because we hire so often, it's, you know, people, they wait a long time before they present, but they can present on any topic. And it allows a remote for, you know, workforce to kind of get to know someone behind the scenes a little bit, which I find is important. So we'll never get rid of that, you know, random subject of presentation. I love that part. After they're done, then we turn it over to our chief product officer and he runs all of our demos. So each of our teams will demo whatever they've worked on for the last cycle. So you may ask how often we run them, and we run an all hands meeting every cycle, and we run cycles on, you know, a 6 week, I don't want to call them sprints, but 6 week cycle, 2 week break, and then we get back onto another cycle again.
And it's pretty similar to Basecamp, like shape up method. Unless you're
familiar. I think they might have been part of our original inspiration. I know we've riffed on that since then, but I liked that cadence. Sprints were too fast, but stuff that's too far away, you kind of lose your grip on it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I can talk about that for hours, but that will kind of a bit off topic. Yeah. So quick question. You mentioned about random subject. Is it like totally random, not necessarily work related?
Yes. Oh, no, wow. It can't be. Yeah. The only rule is that it cannot be work related. Yeah. We ban work. So we've had people demonstrate how to bake really, really good biscuits, how they take care of their yard, whether we're in a simulation, a magic system from a sci-fi book, like a charity that this person was really active in. It just runs. It's so fun. And you do really get to know the person. And we are putting them on the spot. It's not fun for remote working possible introverts to do that, but they do a really good job. And it's a lot of fun. So I love that part of it.
That is hilarious. And I also found this very consistent with your culture. So when I was doing research about YNAB, there's an emphasis on, you know, a sense of humor. And I think it's also came from your personality as well, I think.
Yeah.
Like it tried to be
just more interesting. Like who wants to hear about work all the time? Like that's totally. If someone talks about only work ever, I wouldn't want to keep, you know, talking, it would get boring.
Yep.
So you let people show their whole side, and I think it makes for a more interesting team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. So moving to the next topic. So in one of your interview, you mentioned that you had one misfire in hiring, which were you found the employee missed, the remote employee missed the energy from an office situation. And since that, you asked on interviews, you asked if he or she gets energy from people, and you ask them if they have a plan to get that energy. I love this approach because I like how you don't dismiss this person entirely, but ask them if they have a plan, right? So I'm just curious. So I know that YNAB creates like amazing benefits and free perks for the companies. And as you mentioned, the culture of being intentional. Do you also kind of like do some check-ins from time to time to ask them, hey, did you go to meetup or something like that?
Check-ins on whether they're kind of interacting socially, kind of getting out a little bit?
Yes. Or let me rephrase that a bit. Either check-ins or kind of like, do you help facilitate this in any way? You know?
Yeah. We do have meetups for the teams. Those are, you know, about once a year. And so they all get together then. And then we have an annual retreat for the entire company where we all get together. You know, they can work from wherever they want as long as the internet's reliable. And, you know, if they need to have phone calls, that it works out wherever they are. But the key is that you don't want to pass over someone because they never have worked remotely if they could pick it up pretty quickly. And we've had plenty of people say, man, remote work was harder than I thought it would be, but now I'm doing just fine. It's just a matter of being patient with the transition. And we've only had it happen that one time where someone really just said, yeah, I can't do this. And that is what it is. But most of the time people will happily adapt. There's so many benefits to it, that it doesn't take a lot once there's some intention at the start, and then you really do find a rhythm, and it's not something that I've found that we have to regularly train on or things like that.
Right.
It comes really naturally for people.
Right. I totally love this because I see after a lot, there are two types of remote companies. The first one is that they like to strictly hire people who has remote experience, and it's not bad by itself. It's just like, that's how they work. And the other companies like YNAB that, yeah, even though you don't have a remote work experience, we can train you on that, or we can help you on that. So yeah. I thought you loved that.
I mean, if you're, you know, to be honest, if you were to have two people that are equal in every single possible way, and one person's remotely worked for a decade, you'd give the nod to the one that already had the experience. But I've never had that situation where everything is equal. Yep. So I would not want to toss out a candidate because they hadn't had that experience. They can get it quickly.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. You mentioned about a company meetup. So you have this small meetups, and then the big meetup is kind of like the company retreat, right? Yeah. And can you share a bit more about the small meetups? Like, so it's basically like the product team meetup, exec team meetup, or marketing team meetups. Is that how it's designed?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got different support teams that have different specialties. They'll meet up together. Mm-hmm. The executives meet up quarterly because we have to be in a little bit of a different cadence. But the other teams will meet up at least, once a year. And on the off part of that year, we'll do the company retreat. So hopefully they're meeting with someone else from the team every 6 months, you know, either the big company retreat and then about 6 months later, the smaller team meetup. It just does wonders for connecting people and improving the remote work aspect to get together every once in a while.
Amazing. So for this small meetup, like how long is it? How many days is usually?
We're running them 2 full days. So they travel in on day one, full day two of work, full day three, and then travel out day four. Our feedback from the team is that that's a little too short. So we may extend them to probably try 3 days. Once you've done all the work of the logistics, staying another day might make pretty good sense.
Right. So the small meetups, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a bit more work focused compared to the big meetups. Is that correct?
Yeah. The retreat, that big meetup, we don't work at all. But the team meetups, they're work focused. I mean, their goal is to get things done and really use that for work time. They play a little, but like an evening, you know, nothing.
Right.
It really work. They're in a conference room. It's boring. It's not boring, but it's work, you know.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So I only know that a lot of remote companies have small meetups only after I started this podcast. And it's interesting because everyone does it differently. I just find it fascinating. In terms of scaling, now you guys are like 100 plus people, and before it was like from a dozen, 50 people and whatnot. So as you look back, so I wonder what are the things that you think YNAB as a company is getting better as you're scaling remotely, or what are the biggest pain points in the early days that you guys now are better at?
Probably the very largest was bottlenecking at the product, kind of the product strategy, product feature junction. So we're trying to push down more decision making to smaller teams and kind of distribute problem solving that way, and not have the all problems solved way high up the chain and then having prescriptions pushed down. Instead, we want the problem to be defined and solved at a much lower, smaller team level. And so the bottlenecking there, I don't think you get as good of an idea. I don't think the solution will be as elegant or effective when everything comes from way high up and it's slower. So that's probably the biggest push we have towards scaling. There are other little aspects that are uninteresting probably for a podcast, but the big one is just steering the product. You know, you want to start thinking about big strategy at the top, at the very biggest level, but you don't want to prescribe solutions to the problems at that level, because there are far too many problems. And I think you bottleneck up there pretty quickly.
Yeah. I like that you also acknowledge that sometimes the solution is probably not as elegant as it can be, but the trade-off is you give this authority for the smaller teams, and that's just good for the company.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean that the smaller team will come up with a more elegant solution. I meant just the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's because they're able to obsess over one problem and not be thinking about two dozen. And knowing that you're a bottleneck and need to solve two dozen problems, I think there is where lies the error. But mm-hmm. if you have one team obsessing over one problem and that team is cross-functional, you will get a very elegant solution in comparison to having, one small leadership team attempting to solve mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah. Got it. Awesome. So I want to move on a bit to the YNAB's hiring process. So yeah. one of the things that you mentioned online, or I think on one of the company's blog posts, that you guys acknowledge that you guys are hiring slowly, and you accept that. And can you share a bit more about, how long is the average hiring cycle is, the process, and so on?
Yeah, the hiring cycle is different for different positions, but it's been, 10 weeks plus, and we want it shorter for all the obvious reasons that you'd want your hiring cycle shorter. That being said, if you were to say, well, we can make it shorter for you, but you won't be able to nail that hire as far as their fit into the culture, then I would say, I don't care if it takes 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. It will take as long as it takes to make sure that they are a core value fit. Mm-hmm. Technical fits are easy. Core value fits do take us, at the moment with this iteration of our process, do take us longer. But so far we've hired right. And so it's just a matter of saying, well, gosh, wouldn't we like it shorter so we could be more competitive, get offers out more quickly? Absolutely. But you would never compromise core value fit for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of your company values that I found over and over again on the internet is like culture over craft, which a very concise way in putting it. I really love that.
Yeah, you'll find that if the core values are all synchronized and people are living them, 95% of the time, that all of a sudden you don't have all these other issues that slow everything down. So you can have someone that's technically an absolute genius, but if they're hard to work with, if they can't communicate effectively, if they politic, if they gossip, it's a deal breaker, right?
Yep. Definitely. Right. So I did a bit of research on YNAB's interview process. So I looked at Glassdoor and I found an interesting pattern of questions, even though I am behind a paywall because I don't want to create a Glassdoor account. I just see the first questions for every candidate. But I found a pattern there. So it's super easy to spot. So some of questions, including the question that the YNAB team asked the candidates, includes, what is your most embarrassing moment? And what are your favorite and least favorite parts of your current job? And, or tell us a time when you handled something poorly or made a mistake at work. So there is a pattern of like self-reflection here. So what kind of answer or characteristic that you're looking for with these questions?
Yeah, we are looking for someone that's being genuine. So if you say, hey, what kind of mistake did you make at work? And they say, one time I was 5 minutes late to this meeting. I was so embarrassed. I don't like being late to meetings. I would be very unimpressed by that answer. I want to have you fall on your face, right? Mm-hmm. I want to figuratively. Well, although people have written about embarrassing moments where they did literally fall on their face, but you just want the answer to be genuine. I want to get the real person. I don't want to have you put on a show for me. I want you to show me you. I don't want to know interview you. I want to know real you, right? The working you, the one that could demonstrate these core values that we're seeking. So we're really just looking for a genuine answer. Mm-hmm. And there's no right answer to an embarrassing moment, but I just want to see that they don't give us some cop out about, how one time they called someone the wrong name. Hey, come on. Everybody's done that. We want to hear something that's meaty and that shows that you're not afraid to show the real you. Mm-hmm. Because if you're working with everyone at an organization that all is comfortable in their own skin, they all are not afraid to show them the real them, the real self there, then you find that all of these other walls just come tumbling down and people can just get to work and enjoy themselves in the process. But when you have to kind of constantly ask yourself, is my boss this or is my boss that, or is this direct report mean this or that? I mean, my word, it slows everything down. And you can have technical geniuses, but you won't get anything done.
God, do you find like these questions are usually a pretty good filter in figuring out if this person is, let's say, humble or self-reflective and whatnot?
Yeah, absolutely. We are always iterating on the questions. We'll find that one doesn't really differentiate one candidate from another, or 20 candidates from the other 20. So we'll tweak questions until we feel like that question adds actual value to the process. We had original questions in there, but you know, it's always an iterative process to find those questions that are really helping the hiring manager suss out those, that whether that person really has the values we're looking for.
Got it. I didn't mention this before we start recording, but you guys also hire, you guys hire a mix of part-timers and full-timers, am I correct?
Yeah, on our customer support side, we do. There are some people that, and some roles that really fit nicely into a part-time role. And there are some people that really just want part-time work. And so when those two things overlap, we'll pick up some customer support part-time roles. We don't do it for any other position beyond some teachers that run workshops for us and email support.
Right. Got it. Yeah, that makes sense, especially when it comes to customer support, because you want to cover 24 hours, right?
People from
like me, I'm in Taipei, Taiwan right now. It's 14 hours ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And it's, if I have a question about YNAB, I would love to not wait a day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that's really amazing. So so part-timer and full-timer, do they have the same onboarding process?
They do not, because there is more to the full-time, just as far as benefits go and things like that. So it's slightly different, but you could say 85% of it's going to be the same, because you're still getting those part-timers up to speed on the things they need to know to do their job well. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be 95% of the job, for
sure. Right. Awesome. So I think it's a good segue to YNAB's onboarding process for new hire. So I found it fascinating. So whenever I talk about remote hiring with other remote startup leaders, their company always put an emphasis in onboarding process. It's almost like it's a make or break that make this new hire will be successful in the company or integrate well to the company culture or not. So I'd love to understand a bit more about a YNAB's onboarding process, or if there's anything more special in YNAB's onboard that you think other companies can learn from.
Yeah, we do. We send them a welcome package that I'm surprised more companies don't do this, whether they're remote or not. Someone's first day should feel awesome. They just went through the grinder to get there, and you really want to reinforce to them that they are where they are. You always get your guy, and that it's going to be like the test is over. They're on the team, right? So if it's, it's got to be a situation where the candidate that's now a hire, where she feels like, oh man, I'm in the club. I'm in the inner circle. You know, I've got it. A lot of times people start their jobs still kind of feeling like they're being tested. And so we do anything we can to just really assuage that fear, where he or she can just get, you know, firing on all cylinders, and set aside that fear that they're still being scrutinized. They're not. They're on the team. They're in, you know. And so that part's key. The welcome package is nice because we want to make a big deal out of it. And then we also make sure that they have an onboarding buddy. I think we call them onboarding buddies. But just somewhere where you say, hey, this person knows that you will bug them, and they are expecting it. And if you don't, you will offend them. So bug them, you know, ask them at any point, at any time, bend their ear, and then 3 minutes later, ask them something else. Like, they stand ready to just help you get any questions answered that we've missed in the process. Mm-hmm. One other key thing we do is about 6 weeks after their start date, we have them have a call with our COO to get feedback while it's still fresh in their mind on what we as a company could have done better to onboard them. And that helps us kind of keep the process getting hopefully better each time.
Right. That is amazing. And when you say welcome pack, like, is it a physical welcome pack that you send to their house?
Yeah. You make sure it lands on the day. So you got to pay a little extra postage to make sure it's timed right. And it just includes, you know, includes things you'd expect, swag and welcome, you know, the employees all write welcome notes, why they're excited this person's joining the team. And it's so far it's gone over really, really well. And if there's anything we can do to make it better, we're going to do it. But I've loved the effect it's had, where it's put people at ease and it's let them hit the ground running, knowing that, you know, they're on the team.
Right. Amazing. Now, as you were speaking, I was thinking, like, is there any other remote companies that do that? I was also thinking of my previous guests. Like, I think you were the first one that mentioned, like, really sending physical package on their first day of work. So that's amazing. I do think a lot of companies should do that. And I really like when you say you want them to feel that they're an insider now.
Yeah.
I think this feeling is super underrated in any certain situations, because the feeling you're feeling accepted. Just for myself, for example, like before I work in a startup world, I used to work in a very traditional industry. I was selling stainless steel materials. So that's a totally different thing. But at that time, the feeling was like, I just want to work at a startup and I want to feel like, I want to be a part of them, for example. But so when I got accepted at, previously was Code Mentor X before it was Arc, and that's a feeling that, oh yes, I am one of them. And it's really strong feeling that makes you identify with this company almost forever. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I totally love that. Right. So we're kind of like been running out of time here. So I want to kind of like ask some like lightweight personal questions about the impacts of remote work on your life, for example. So Jesse, so I've seen one of the biggest benefits of remote work that I've seen recently is basically the time. You have more time to spend with your family. So you've been working remotely since almost around a decade, I think. And
oh, yeah. Longer than
I,
that. Yeah.
Right. I wonder what are the positive impacts that being able to work remotely brings to you and, you know, and growing your family and so on.
Yeah. There are the obvious ones that the average commute's 20 minutes. So you save 40 minutes a day. I mean, 40 minutes for 5 days a week, where you get into meaningful time very, very quickly, 200 minutes a week. You multiply that out and you're talking about serious time, not sitting in a car. And that's a big deal. And not to mention the savings on just the wear and tear on the car itself. Life is simpler. You don't have to coordinate as much.
True.
There are a lot of our employees that have gone down to one car instead of two. That saves a ton of money. They don't have to wardrobe up, which is really nice. You can wear your clothes out a little longer. You don't have to, you can have a fewer nice things that you want to wear out. You can just be a little more selective there. I'm not saying you wear your sweats. There is a strategy that a lot of people use where they're like, no, I want to look good for the day. And I agree with that. You want to start your day and treat yourself right. But you don't have to, you'll save money still on the, on the clothing side. So there's that. And there's less stress in a remote work environment. You give people a little bit more flexibility on their schedule. You treat them like adults. And suddenly if life is good at work, then life is good at home. And the idea of work-life balance to me is wrong. I don't see it as a tug back and forth. I don't see them as mutually exclusive. I don't see them as canceling each other out. To me, if work is good, then life is good. And if home life is good, then life is good. But it's just life, all of it's life. And so the idea of like work-life and balancing it evenly in something, I think we're just chasing after a phrase that someone used that never has meant much. So just that flexibility, the recognition that life is life, and it includes all of these things. We recognize that you hire people that are honest, that want to do good work, and they'll run through walls for you if you treat them well. And I think treating remote or allowing people to work remotely is allowing people to, or I should say is treating people well, because there are so many arbitrary, weird things about going into an office. And when old school or heck current CEOs ask me, well, how do you know they're working? And I'm sitting, we're sitting there talking at some conference and I'm saying, well, you're sitting at this conference. How do you know they're working? I mean, you're remote from your employees right now. So they're all at an office and you're gone. How do you know they're working? If you're wondering whether or not your employees are working, then it is not because they're remote or co-located. It's because you wonder whether your employees are working. And that is a totally different issue than the environment. So It's a soapbox for me, but you hire good people. It doesn't matter if they're remote or located in some Airbnb, they'll do good work.
Yeah, that's an amazing answer. And I also resonate so much with the thing that you mentioned, that it's just less stress when it comes to remote work, and it actually makes you a better performer. So I just started working fully remote since a couple of months ago. And it's not that I'm less busy. Like, I probably a bit more busier than I was working in the office, but it's kind of interesting. Like, I just got more clarity in thinking. Like, you can just think more clearly, even though you are as busy as usual, but it's just that, you know, less distraction, and the fact that the flexibility, it just like takes this burden off your mind, and there's more clarity on your job and even your life. Like, okay, what I want to do in my life, which is actually, it's funny. And by the way, this is not an ad, it's, or because I'm talking to you, but this is also one of the reasons why I want to start budgeting with YNAB. Because like you can think of, okay, financially, where do I want to go? Like in the couple of months, a couple of years, and so on. So I don't think I will start, you know, being more organized with my life if it's not because of a remote work.
Yeah. Well, people are usually pretty intentional about their careers, and they morph their careers. They're constantly spinning their career into money. That's what we do. Careers generate money. So they're very intentional about their career. And then once that career has converted into money with a paycheck, then they are unintentional with their money. And that is very weird to me, because to me, it's all the same thing. Your career, all this effort you put into it, it transitions into being in the form of money instead. And suddenly it's like, who cares? Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a strange turn of events. You care so much about your career, and you just don't care at all about your career as it's represented with money. So it's a strange kind of situation that everyone, 80% of people find themselves in, and we try and fix that. So I think we'll always have a market for people that need to do it a little better than they're doing it.
Great. Yeah, that's amazing. So yeah, Jesse, it's been a fantastic chat. So where can people find you online?
They could email me if they wanted to. It's jesse@ynab.com. I don't tweet. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Instagram. I don't have a blog or anything. So you can just shoot me a good old fashioned email. And if you have any questions, and I'm happy to help out in any way I can.
All right. Awesome. Again, yeah. So for listeners out there, check up YNAB. You need a budget. I'm a proud user, still working on it because it takes some time, but it's, as for now, it's really worth it for me. I'm getting more organized and whatnot. This sounds almost like an ad, but yeah. So Jesse, thanks again for your time.
Thanks so much, Jovian. Have a good day.
Thank you.
And that's it for another episode of Outside the Valley, brought to you by ARC. We created this podcast with the hope that in each episode, you can learn something new from other remote startup people. So if you have any feedback or suggestions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me at jovian@arc.dev. It's jovian@arc.dev. Or you can find us on Twitter @arc.dev. See you next week with another episode of Outside the Valley, and ciao.